to show his children how to kill, and then he must hunt outside the hunting grounds of his pack or tribe. The real reason for this is that man-killing means, sooner or later, the arrival of white men on elephants with guns, and hundreds of brown men with gongs and rockets and torches. Then, everybody in the jungle suffers. The purr grew louder, and ended in the full-throated of the tiger's charge. Then there was a howl, an untigerish howl, from Shere Khan. "He has missed his prey," said Mother Wolf. "The fool has had no more sense than to jump at a woodcutter's campfire and has burned his feet," said Father Wolf, with a grunt. "Tabaqui is with him."
"Something is coming up hell," said Mother Wolf, twitching one ear. "Get ready."
The bushes rustled a little in the thicket, and Father Wolf dropped with his haunches under him, ready for his leap. Then, if you had been watching, you would have seen the most wonderful thing in the world. The wolf checked in mid-spring. He made his bound before he saw what it was he was jumping at, and then he tried to stop himself.
"Man," he snapped, "a man's cub. Look."
Directly in front of him, holding on by a low branch, stood a naked brown baby who could just walk, as soft and as dimpled a little atom as ever came to a wolf's cave at night. He looked up into Father Wolf's face and laughed.
"Is that a man's cub?" said Mother Wolf. "I have never seen one. Bring it here."
A wolf, accustomed to moving his own cubs, can, if necessary, mouth an egg without breaking it. And though Father Wolf's jaws closed right on the child's back, not a tooth even scratched the skin as he laid it down among the cubs.
"How little, how naked, and how bold," said Mother Wolf softly.
The baby was pushing his way between the cubs to get close to the warm hide.
"Ah, he is taking his meal with the others. And so this is a man's cub. Now was there ever a wolf that could boast of a man's cub among her children?"
"I have heard now and again of such a thing, but never in our pack or in my time," said Father Wolf. "He is altogether without hair, and I could kill him with a touch of my foot. But see, he looks up and is not afraid."
The moonlight was blocked out of the mouth of the cave, for Shere Khan's great square head and shoulders were thrust into the entrance. Tabaqui, behind him, was squeaking,
my lord, it went in here."
"Shere Khan does us great honor," said Father Wolf, but his eyes were very angry. "What does Shere Khan need?"
"My quarry. A man's cub went this way," said Shere Khan. "Its parents have run off. Give it to me."
"The wolves are a free people," said Father Wolf. "They take orders from the head of the pack and not from any striped cattle killer. The man's cub is ours to kill if we choose."
"You choose and you do not choose. What talk is this of choosing? By the bull that I killed, am I to stand nosing into your dog's den for my fair dues? It is I, Shere Khan, who speak."
The tiger's roar filled the cave with thunder. "The cub is mine, and to my teeth he will come in the end, O bush-tailed thieves." And he bounded out of the cave. Mother Wolf threw herself down, panting among the cubs. And Father Wolf said to her gravely,
"Shere Khan speaks this much truth. The cub must be shown to the pack. Will you still keep him, mother?"
"Keep him?"
she gasped.
"He came naked by night, alone and very hungry, yet he was not afraid. Look, he has pushed one of my babes to one side already, and that lame butcher would have killed him, and would have run off to the Waingunga while the villagers here hunted through all our lairs in revenge. Keep him?" "Assuredly, I will keep him. Lie still, little frog. Oh, you Mowgli. For Mowgli, the frog, I will call you. The time will come when you will hunt Shere Khan as he has hunted you."
"But what will our pack say?" said Father Wolf.
Arkela, the great grey lone wolf who led all the pack by strength and cunning, lay out at full length on his rock, and below him sat 40 or more wolves of every size and